Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Grateful for each and every one of you who will join us on this March 16th, 2021. Yes, the year is moving out of here, and we have officially sprang forward. All right, time is different. Days are longer now. The sun stays out longer, I should say. Okay? It's open mic. You get the microphone tonight. We may have an abbreviated show here tonight. However, tonight is on you, so we're opening our dialogue to your interests, topics that you want us to try to discuss. We don't mind trying to do that. We just hope and expect everyone to show courtesy and respect to others as we dialogue. I don't have all the answers, although I'm certain about what I'm trying to say to you or what I'm offering to you. It doesn't necessarily make it right just because I said it. Nonetheless, we're grateful again for our dialogue, our discussion, and all of our regular listeners and participants. Having a little issue here with my Facebook here, but that's all right. Bear with us. We're still on with the podcast there. So 657-383-0944. That is the number you can call, 657-383-0944. Give us a call here. We'd love to speak with you and hear your thoughts and walk through some things. We had a couple of comments that were shared via Facebook prior to the show that individuals wanted us to share here, and we'd be happy to do that as well. At the end of the day, we realize that time can be our enemy if we don't use it wise. And what I'd like to do is to admonish us all to think about where we are and what we do. I'm opening up the floor to conversation again. The number 657-383-0944. And we, you know, we're simply looking forward to having dialogue with us. Your host, Reverend Dockery. Hopefully, Pastor Waller will be able to join us here in a little bit. And again, we'd like to have an abbreviated show tonight, but it's open mic. So feel free to chime in to introduce your discussion, your topic, your conversation. James Brown said something, and you may not like him, you might not agree with him, but he was right. He was right. And essentially, he was speaking about a lot of folk there, opining their conversations and their position. And he was saying that often people do a lot of loud talking, but yet at the same time, they're saying nothing. They're saying nothing. 657-383-0944. That's the number to call. Listen, talk quick. It's your host for everybody. Check out what James Brown said.
Just talking loud. Just saying nothing. Just saying nothing. Just saying nothing. You can tell me how to run my mind down. You can tell me how to keep my focus down. You can tell me what I'm doing wrong. When you be driving and singing that same old funny song, you can tell me which way to go. From the real good seven and then come on. You can tell me. Like a dead night, just these cousins, just talking loud, just saying nothing, just saying nothing, just saying nothing. Don't tell me how you are saying, but you can't get to the moon. Don't tell me how to be a boy. When you know I'm gone, get you like a woman when I'm dressed.
You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Doctor again, and it's open mic. It's open mic. So James Brown said, talking loud, saying nothing. I hope that I'm not opening my big mouth and just doing a lot of loud talking and saying nothing of substance, nothing of substance. I mentioned earlier before we went to James Brown that there was a post that we got on Facebook prior to the show starting, and one of our previous guests, she opined, she said that she is concerned about a few things. One of them is the disrespect of young people toward elders. All right? Legitimate concern. Legitimate concern. She couldn't join us tonight, but she did want to share that, and I promised to share this with the listening audience. The other thing she talked about was the lack of overall accountability for what's going on part of individuals who are presumed to be leaders or of influence, capable of addressing those issues. And then lastly, this idea that we are not really moving forward as we perhaps want or should. And so I appreciate that, and regretfully she's not able to be with us tonight. I think you're going to be our guest on next week sometime, though. We talk about a very, very important topic. Those are the three things. Those are the three things that, again, we're not moving forward like we need to. There is a presence of poor, inept leadership and lack of accountability. And our young people are just out of control with disrespect. Now, let me just say that it's not fair to paint all young people with that broad brush. But in early grade, you see young people who can give you a piece of their mind with their words. What is it that causes that? Like, perhaps that's a good question. If you're following me on Facebook here, now, Facebook Live, if you can see us, we've been having issues with that, but if you can see us, give us a call here, 657 383-0944. That is the number you can call us here. We'll be happy to entertain your question and comments there and hopefully move forward. But I'll just keep going and speaking to you until we get a call. 657-383-0944. That's the number to call here tonight. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. So you know that we've been having a number of different topics and discussions over the years, and we came in hot in 2021 focusing on some specifics about empowering young folk who are on the periphery of society and have it rough, empowering them to step outside of that, not to accept that as their reality, and to demonstrate first, not to other people, but demonstrate to themselves that they have the wherewithal, the capabilities of producing, being successful, and managing, maintaining their independence economically, socially, spiritually, even politically, okay? So what we really have done is to set a template or the stage for the year 2021. Our theme is Let It Be Done in 2021. Set the stage or template for having a platform for these types of things, right? And so I encourage each of you to join me here tonight with your ideas. It's open mic. It's open mic. That means the floor is yours. I would love to hear your thoughts and listen to you here. And, you know, if you have any questions or comments for me, you hear me speaking a lot. And typically we provide a monologue, which gives a backdrop for the topics that I introduce on the show. But tonight we suspend with that in order for us to hear from you. We've had quite a few discussions. Perhaps there are some questions you'd like to ask about previous ones or some points that you did not have an opportunity to make. Well, this is a good time to do that. It's a good time to do that. And look at here. Look at here. Guess who I got with me in the studio tonight. Boy, I tell you, if she get any prettier, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. Welcome out of Peoria, Illinois. We call her 8112, a.k.a. Mama D. How are you?
I'm doing all right, sir. How's everybody doing?
Maintaining. It's just the two of us right now. And it's open.
That's
mic
fine. I missed talking to you guys last week or listening, talking both. I just thought I'd call in and check in, let you know I'm all right.
How's the family? How's the rest of the family?
Everybody's doing okay, as far as I know, hanging in there, like you said, maintaining.
There you go. That's all we can do, ain't it?
Yes, sir.
Look, I keep saying I'm holding in the road, but I got a hard-hit mule. I tell it to go right, it won't help.
Ain't that something, how that works out like that sometimes?
Yeah. Old folks, you say, whoa, dude, bag. But, yeah.
What Pastor Weller at?
I'm not sure. Hopefully he'll be able to join us. You know, oftentimes he's working in ministry or what have you, and he kind of parks over and or stops for a second to join us. So
yeah.
Hopefully he'll get a chance. Hopefully he'll get a chance.
I understand. Tonight.
But let me open the floor to you. You got the floor. You got the microphone. Huh?
Well,
you got the microphone.
But, you know, everything's going, you know, it could be worse, so it's not bad.
Yeah.
Could be worse. There's a lot going on out here, so you got to be grateful. You know, being blessed to do as well as we do, that's the way I look at it.
Sure. So do you get the sense that in your city things are beginning to get back to as they were, a sense of normalcy as they were prior to shutdowns and things of that nature? Do you get that sense, or Are people still...
wasn't really out there like that to begin with anyway, but I don't think it's going to be normal as it was.
Okay, okay.
For a while.
Okay, okay.
Because that fear have been placed in you already. And so a lot of times, I know I'm still walking around with my mask on when I go into the stores and things.
Right.
And in Illinois, especially Peoria, the governor here has not lifted everything totally up.
I see. I see.
Yeah.
So I guess that's up to him or on a city-by-city basis, huh?
It is, state-by-state basis, whichever, I mean, however that works. The governor's, it's their own decision, but I also saw on the news where a lot of people was out in, you know, the real nice warm climate places.
Right.
And on the beaches, and I'm talking about from what I could see by the drove. I'm like, oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, I think generally people are ready to get back to life as they knew it. There are a lot of people who were knocked off, you know, if you will, off of their platforms. And some of them are still getting up to start, especially those who have businesses and what have you, and lost jobs and even loved ones and missed it all. But people are trying to get back to some semblance of happiness, you know, and normalcy. So, and I hope that.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I hope that, no, that's okay. I was just going to say, I hope that that desire doesn't become a point of contention where people start saying that you're wrong if you want to get back to normalcy or what was normal for years. You know what I mean? Hope people don't start making me feel bad.
Well, I don't think it's wrong to miss cluttering up, especially when you're used to being around big, you come from a big family, you used to, when you have functions, you usually have big gatherings.
Right.
And people are missing, a lot of them are missing their elderly loved ones because they're scared to go around them, you know. And that part is very sad. It seems like they're trying to strip us of what the good Lord gave us, and that's love.
Yeah. That can have an emotional,
you know, that closeness. People are afraid to get as close as they were.
Right. And you know, 12, that has a psychological effect on anybody. If you feel like you're isolated, you know, and feel guilty about wanting to bond and interact with other human beings, that can have a psychological effect on you. I read a few articles. Yeah. I was just going to say I read a few articles about that where they were saying that particularly young people, school-age children, were, of course, they don't have a lot of data or a lot of research on it because it's only been a year, right? But preliminarily, they've had some instances where, you know, they had certain behavior where children were acting out and so forth. And one of our Facebook people posted some things. She couldn't be with us tonight, but she asked if I could introduce this in our open mic segment. So maybe I'll just share it with you, and if you like, you can respond to it. She was just saying that she's concerned about the display of disrespect, not from all, I don't believe she was saying all young people, but so many young people. And how and why that is, that exists. You care to respond to that at all?
My intake on that is she's right.
Mm.
Some of them may be within your own family. I mean, it's so sad, especially when you know either you didn't raise them like that or you wasn't brought up like that. And you, where it's coming from, I think the mentality of younger people these days just suck, some of them, because they don't understand how hard it is for either their parents, some of them, or even the people that's their caretaker.
Right.
To reach out and trying to grab them to keep them from sinking to fall of failure.
Right.
And
that's,
I think that's really hard. It's hard when they're going against the grain, you know, and a lot of times teenagers do that, call rebellious. I got it. But at some point, coming up into young man adulthood and young woman adulthood, you're going to have to sit on your own bottom.
That's the truth.
Yes,
the
accept
truth.
Your own responsibilities. If you failing at something, you have you to blame because you have to put in the work if you want to get something out of it. And
that's
what it
is. Yeah. You know, that's interesting, though, 12, because when if I'm a young person and I see everybody else saying and doing what they want to when they get ready, and then my parents try to hold me accountable for certain types of behaviors that's unlike everybody else, it feels like they treat me wrong or they cheated me from experience. You see what I mean?
I feel, and he feels that way. Like, I talked to him today. I said, son, and he just turned 13, days after his birthday. And he feel like, well, some of the other kids can talk
13.
On their
a mental health expert say that virtual learning during the pandemic has left overwhelmed.
That was Pastor Wallace.
That? Okay. But, yeah, just as, you know, it's hard on them because he's the only boy in the house and he has two siblings, which are both girls.
Okay.
So when mom corrects him when he's wrong, he gets to thinking he's the man of the house. Well, not quite, son.
Mm-hmm.
You know, say your own bills and stuff. So, no,
that's
you're
right.
not. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he wants to know why he can't talk on his phone or play these certain games and things on his phone. A lot of the games these kids play got a lot of killing in it.
It sure does, doesn't it? Oh, my goodness.
And it's and it's messing with them because they think it's okay to play these games because it's just a game. But a lot of kids and a lot of kids' mind, these games become real life.
Yeah. Yeah, and what happens is they have the mindset that, okay, just like in the game, if you get shot, you get killed, you get knocked down, you can reset it.
Uh-huh.
Life don't give you a reset, does it? Life don't give you no reset, does it?
No, sir. In this life, you get shot, you get killed, you're dead.
It's over. That's it.
It's over.
Pretty much. Done. You were asking about Pastor Wallace. Pastor Wallace, 8112 is with us, and I'm coming to you 2646 out of Selma, Alabama there. Pastor, she was just asking where you were. I said, he's probably busy, probably parting the Red Sea right now, or bringing the children of Israel. Welcome, sir.
I appreciate your concern in asking about me, 8112. I'm all right. I appreciate that as a whole. But I was training to look. Kid though, I was training a kid that I went by to see his father, and I noticed that the little kid, he's only 8 years of age, and when he seen me, he held his finger up like he wanted to spin the ball. And I said, "Let me go with that ball." So I went on and got the ball out of the cup, kind of trained about an hour. So all right. I appreciate it though.
This open mic night. Let me bring Brother Dunn in out of Selma, Alabama, just for a second here. Tonight is 657-383-0944. That's the number to call. If you're following us live on Facebook, feel free to join us here. If you're listening to us from the Blog Talk Radio platform, you may give us a call here in the studio, 657-383-0944. And we go to Selma, Alabama, Brother Dunn out of Selma. Welcome, sir. To the discussion tonight is open mic.
Mr. Dockery?
Yes, sir.
Guess who just called me, Klein?
I don't have a clue.
Taylor just called me, Klein. And what she was crying about, you remember I told you, and guess what? Then before I called you, they were blocking me not to get to your program. All right?
Oh, my.
And I called Intel office. And you know what I said, Mr. Dockery? Until you start locking these Negro, Black, and Colored, African-American Democrats up, ain't nothing going to change.
Oh, okay. Well,
hey, Mr. Doctor, the reason I'm saying that, I'm getting also attacked. I'm getting attacked. I'm going to say this to you. I'm getting attacked by these Negro Democrats.
Oh,
all right? And my daughter want me to come spend some time with her. And, Mr. Dockery, I'm going to go do that.
That's a good idea. I think that's a great idea. Don't you, Pastor Wallen, 8112? I mean, you know, that's your baby. That's your baby. Go see her. And,
yeah.
Mr.
Dockery, can I tell you something? I got to be honest with all of y'all. Y'all know who my dad was. I'm going to be honest with all of y'all. What you done heard was a lie. And, Mr. Dockery, I was the first one to move in an apartment on 75th Street. I did not testify in my dad's court case. He did not get a fair trial.
All right.
I'm looking right dead at you. And I told Intel tonight, Mr. Dockery, since you're in Tennessee, you come from Chicago. I said, Intel, you know what's so strange with me? Before you attacked, before they attacked my dad, my cousin came up dead right there in Tennessee. And guess what, Mr. Dockery? I got to be honest with you. On my phone right now, I can call Leon Bell. He knows that for a fact. Because he the one come told me and Mom and Irene.
Okay.
Why he went to jail up there? You don't, Mr. Dockery, don't never play to me that they police and TBI agents up there in Tennessee because they lie. If you kill a girl and you're a judge, you don't go to jail in Tennessee. Let's tell it. And don't forget Dr. King was smothered down there in Memphis. They ain't went to jail.
Second. I hear what you're saying. You got about three or four things for right now. Let's kind of bring it in. But I hear what you're saying, and some things I can do something about, Don, and others I can't. Most of those, I can't do anything about them. So,
You say we got law enforcement, I don't think so. I'm talking about from federal government, TBI. You know, I got some data on that the FBI got some white supremacist groups in it. So, no, they ain't been doing their job at all.
Well, you just take your vacation and visit your daughter and try not to worry about that so bad right now. There's a lot of other stuff going on, too. So just
go spend time with your baby. I think that would be good, Don, if you did that.
Yeah.
You know,
I do, too, Mr. Dockery, because guess what? I ain't spend no time with my oldest son. And I'm going to say something to y'all. I don't even, I'm 61. I'm going to be honest with y'all. I don't even know how to be a father. I ain't even had a chance to be a father in the United States.
Now you got
your chance. Well, here's it. There you go. There's an opportunity, sir. Then she calls you. She's reaching out to you, man. Just go and just shower her with love, man. Shower all love you can. Be patient. Listen. You know what I'm saying? And do the best you can. Well, let me bring New Orleans in.
4756.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Pastor. Go ahead, Pastor. And then we're coming right to you, New Orleans.
The thought of his daughter reaching out to him was the best thing just to hear. And to be able to go and to be a part of that portion of her life that she's reaching out, and then you get a chance to get with her, man, that's priceless, brother. I would love to say to you that I've been that individual that didn't know how to be a father to my kids, and, you know, in my early days of coming up. But my daughter, I ended up raising her. So I would encourage you to go ahead, brother. And, you never know what a day would bring forth and how much of a difference it would make when she sees you.
True. Okay. Well, let's recognize New Orleans, 4756. I believe that's Brother Warren there in New Orleans, Louisiana. It's overnight, Brother Warren.
Yeah, greetings. I had read on the screen of your show what the menu was, and you said open mic.
Yeah.
So with this karaoke night, are we going to sing or something or what?
Well, if you sing, I don't know, man. But if you have a thought, we're open to it.
One thing I wanted to contribute is among the many good things of the stimulus package, the American Rescue Package, is a portion where it forgives the loans of black farmers, Native American farmers, and Hispanic farmers, the loans up to 120%, who've been systematically discriminated against by the local farm service agents. You know, every county and every state only has one person that's a farm service agent that makes a decision as to whether people get the loans or whatnot. So this is a positive, among the many other positive things And the whole purpose of the stimulus package is to get people to spend the money they're getting to kind of kick the economy going, like a little what you do when somebody battery dead, you give them a boost or something, you know?
Right.
And
right,
so
right, right.
Some of this is going to give some people some relief, you know, maybe temporarily, but it'll give them something.
Yeah, we were just 8112 out of Fuel when I was just talking about how, you know, everybody's life was on hold, and people want to be able to get back and do something. So I would hope that we're able to do that and still keeping. One of the things we learned about this whole thing is that we should have had better health habits prior to, but I hope it encouraged us to have them now and maintain them, you know what I mean, moving forward. So, well, I hope that it does what it's intended to do then,
On the pandemic, one of the things we have to be careful about how the stories were going was focusing on African-American people, so on and so forth. Remember, a whole lot of white folk dying in this stuff, and a whole lot of white folk lifestyles are not healthy. And as far as the vaccination, I'm seeing articles that are saying African-American vaccinations lag, but everybody I know is taking the vaccine. But the people who are Trump supporters, they say that they're not taking the vaccine. So what I'm saying is there's a lot of stuff being put on us, really, that they're the ones doing it. You see what I'm saying? And so we have to be careful about the type of propaganda that's promoted about us as if we're just so problematic. We're so used to that storyline about us, you know? Look at spring break with these young people in Miami Beach. And they're all overwhelmingly white youth, but nobody's questioning and examining their morals, their family values, their family upbringing. It doesn't become part of the narrative, you know. And
well,
so we kind of have to break this approach where we're the problem, you know.
No, well, I agree with you that we definitely don't want to label ourselves as the problem. Not at all, for sure. However, if we're going to, I think you would agree with me that if we're going to resolve any kind of issues that we do face, we have to embrace them, right? And I appreciate what you're saying in a fair and balanced manner, identify the changes that are needed and necessary. But, you know, the truth of the matter is we, for years, people have tried and encouraged, and I know myself as a pastor, and my wife is a health professional. In my congregation, at my church, we encouraged, when we got together, we had gatherings and meals, we encouraged healthier choices of foods. You see what I mean? But, you know, soul food is a vital part of our history. You know what I'm saying, bro? When you're from New Orleans, you know that. You know that old Creole meal, man, they're going to throw a little bit of that. Little lizard, a little alligator, a little snake, a little rabbit, bro.
That's a stereotype for us, man. That's a stereotype. The type of meals I grew up on and that I cook, we ate a lot of beans. We ate red beans, butter beans and okra, crowded peas and okra. We ate white beans and a lot of different green leaf vegetables. We had a lot of stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff, you know, again, that we let go of ourselves. We have to kind of put it, we have to slow it down to reexamine it. You know, black people coming out to rural areas were vegetable growers. They were gardeners. They knew how to grow gardens. And so you talk about black-eyed peas and crowded peas. You know, these things were part of our diet, not just the stuff that was promoted as being soul food, you know? And sweet potatoes, we do sweet potatoes all kind of way, baked sweet potatoes, you know. So it's just sometimes we have to really examine the full story of something, you know. Now, right now, while I'm speaking, I'm eating yogurt and blackberries.
What?
You know?
That's good for you. That's good for you. We're going to have Dr. Pedro Jackson on again next week. And the focus of our conversation with her is going to be about healthier, right? and mental health and things of that nature, and how we can improve moving forward, specifically African American and Afro-American subculture. So I'm grateful that she's going to be on with us, and we're going to really talk about the history of soul food has played in the Negro American experience. You know, it's real. So, but yeah, appreciate that. But let me just say that Jacksonville, Florida, she says, hello, everyone. She has an early morning 4 a.m. Get up tomorrow. She hopes to catch us on. So she just shot us a message there on Facebook. That appreciate you, man. We appreciate you. And go to bed and get on up.
Yeah, tell her thank you.
We'll see you Thursday. But I appreciate what you're saying there. Another thing is there have been a lot of, Brother Warren, I think that there have been a lot of distractions from important matters and issues that are germane to particularly those who struggle the most, right? And if we allow those things to distract us, we lose our sense of focus from what we ought to be doing at the present moment. And when that time passes, you know, we don't get it again.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I would just say that we should, perhaps 12 in New Orleans, the focus should be to stop and process and prioritize what's most important. You know, and I think that's what happens a lot of times with a lot of young folk who don't really have a lot of context and understanding, don't have much experience in life, is they get so many things thrown at them at one time, bombardment at one time. They really don't know how to determine what's best. What do you think about that, 12?
Well, yeah, pretty much. And then sometimes some of them just so spoiled, they don't want to accept certain things. Some of them, you know, instead of the parents, some of the parents trying to give them the upbringing, even though we're all different at how we raise our children. I'm not trying to knock anyone for that, but I'm saying
Money
can't give them the actual nurturing and love that they need. A lot of people these days, especially younger folks, figure, well, I spent $200 on my baby some gym shoes.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, and he or she is going to do what with them? Grow out of them like anybody else would.
Tear them up. Yeah. Bro, Warren, would you spend $200 on me? I'm just curious.
I wouldn't spend $200 on me a pair of gym shoes.
I know, that's right. I know. I was asking New Orleans. Can you hear me, New Orleans? Would you spend $200
on
me a pair of shoes? Huh?
I didn't even rip.
I'm asking the question. Would you spend $200 on them?
I've spent that amount for my children on clothes and various type of clothing to need. I've done that.
Specifically tennis shoes. Would you spend that much on tennis shoes? I mean, it's your business if you did. Let me make that disclaimer. I understand.
Yeah, well, right now my kids are grown, but I mean, you know, at the time,
right.
Depends on what it was. I mean, there were other things that they were not spoiled, you know, but I mean, when they asked for things, my wife and I, we would get them. We would get the things for them, you know.
I see.
But I mean, we had expectations for them, but at the same time, you know, we got things for them. Typically girls, when you raise girls, everybody wants their girl, their daughter, to be special and to be pampered and to have stuff, you know.
All right.
So I can say I've spent lots of money for my daughter, which as she was
all
coming
right.
up on food, you know.
That makes sense. You know the most.
You know, and so when we look at my point is, a lot of times we make these judgments about what people buy, but sometimes that's the only little way they have to show love for their children, particularly in a society where children grow up teasing other children about what they have or what they don't have. You know, I remember in the 80s, in fact, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was the New Orleans School Board that made it trendy to wear uniforms in the public schools. I think that's about sometime in the mid-80s. And, you know, kids, at least in this area here, they wear uniforms in the public schools. And can you imagine the schools where they don't? Cause I don't know what they do in Nashville, but, all school districts don't require uniforms. But imagine the situation if the kids didn't have to wear uniforms, the type of pressure the kids would have about what kind of clothes they would have to wear every day. Kids live through these type of pressures. And so sometimes as a parent, you have to be cognizant of that, and you do have to balance whether you provide your kids with those things or whether you just, parents, when it comes to parents and their children, it's just something very personal and touchy,
I know, but I wasn't saying anything harmful. I was speaking under a level that I come from a family of 13 children. And that wasn't a couple of years ago. So my upbringing may have been, and we wore nice things, mind you. We also had to share certain things. And I didn't see nothing wrong with it now. The younger we get, the older ones sometimes get the little ones, but we always got something new of our own quite often as well. I said, it is frivolous if you're sitting there and can barely pay your rent to put the kids in all these expensive clothing, but the kid is going to school half hungry, tired because nobody might bother to make them go to bed and things of that nature. Yes, there are a lot of people. Yes, I do know your children are supposed to be well taken up. And that goes by your income and whatever you can produce for them to be nice, neat, and clean, and respectable.
Right, right. Well, I was going to say that the most expensive pair of shoes that my wife and I bought for our children were their baby shoes. And you know how you get the hard-bottom baby shoes? And it helps warm their feet and what have you. And we eventually kept them so that we can have them bronzed and as a keepsake. And so those were $100 shoes for a newborn baby.
Yep.
And that's probably the most expensive shoe I can remember buying for either one of my children, both the male and the female. But I guess you're right, though. I think both of y'all are saying the same thing, and that is you want to love your children, right? But you don't want to hurt yourself or hurt them in the process. So that's a – it's open mic.
Right, right.
1 second. I'll come right to you there.
Okay.
657-233-0944. That's another call. And when you get through there, New Orleans, we're joined by St. Louis there, 4600. But go ahead, New Orleans.
No, what I was saying was I know a lot of times that's how we – when I say we as black people – we kind of talk like that. We talk like that at the barbershop, the beauty salon. But if a parent is doing something for their children, a lot of times that's the only little thing parents could do to show their child that they love them. I'll give you an example. My sister, she's a retired teacher, and she would talk about how sometimes parents would come to the school, particularly a father, for their child, and be in a position to argue with the administration or the teacher. But, like she was saying, sometimes that's the only way these parents have to show their kid they kind of, and it's not a constructive way, but it's the only way they try to show their kid that they care for them by going to bed for them, because they haven't done anything else for them. So when we see parents who buy their children something, I've evolved to the point you stay out of judgment of what a parent buys their children. Relationship between the parent and her child or their children is very personal. And so I just over time just don't make any judgments on how much a parent spends for their child in terms of material possession, because we all have and spoil our kids in some form or fashion. In New Orleans, it's very fashionable to give your daughter a debutante ball. So I gave my daughter a debutante. That's something that's pretty kind of common here in this area down here. So I gave her a debutante. She made her debut. And so that's costed, you know, but it's because you want your child. When I was a kid, I can remember pouting and looking sad, you know, because I wanted my way, and my parents went ahead and came in there. So, I mean, that's just something when it comes to parents and their children, that's something we can't be hypocrites. We can't spoil our children and then look at somebody else and then judge, make a judgment on them.
No, yeah, I don't believe, I don't try to judge anyone. I was just only speaking in terms of that. Why some of the kids have real bad attitudes, as Pastor was speaking on up on earlier. And then when they grow up to be young men and women, and they have, and it's a difference when they're a child and then when they become a young male or female, and they wait on people to just hand them their things, as their parents did.
Or feel as though they don't have to work for much anything.
Yeah,
but now,
they feel
I think
like
that's,
people owe it to them, and that's not the case.
Yeah. But I think that's a balance.
It's not what you do. I guess it's safe to say it is how you do it.
I hear what Brother Warren is saying. There's no perfect, no definition of a perfect parent, you know. And we all do the best we can for our children. I believe that.
Well, what I'm saying, Reb, is who am I to determine what another parent should provide their child with or how much money they should? Okay, if I'm being critical, and I'm not jumping on you, period, or dog, I'm just using that as an example. If I'm critical of the mother that buys her child $200 shoes, then how much do I think she should? You see, we start getting to all that kind of stuff, then we become the police on other people. And I just think that a parent and their child and what they get a child is personal. It's a personal relationship that me or you can't understand because we're not part of that bond with those two. We all had children. We all provided our children with stuff. So we should be able to understand it.
It becomes unpersonal when you have children running around, sir, hungry, because the parents are trying to keep up with some parents, not all. And like I said, I don't judge a lot of people, but I know what I've seen myself. And it's not because it's my own children or someone directly close to me. It's just that I know over the years what I've learned, and what I do know is that if you can barely pay the household bills, yes, you can make your kids look just as nice as anybody else's, but at least they got a roof over their head, they got food in their mouths and bellies, and they dress nice and they're bathed and clean and respectable is what I said.
Okay. All right. Let me jump in here. I wanna recognize St. Louis, but I think there's a balance in there. There's a flip side to that. But let me recognize St. Louis. So welcome, sir. It's open mic, and we have been very interesting conversations about value-based, essentially, in families in terms of how parents value what they provide and how they provide for the children. Interesting conversation. Question or comment thus far?
Well, I can't give too much input on the issue of the topic of not having.
Okay.
I never experienced it. I tell you one thing I know of is that you have some African-American children, students who would walk home in their Catholic uniform, and the other kids in the neighborhood would try to jump on them.
Oh, man.
Beat them up.
Wow.
And you talk about those baby shoes. My daughter used to wear Busta Browns. You remember them?
Yes.
Yeah, she used to wear Busta Browns until she got to a certain age.
Okay.
Of course, when I went to high school, we wore alligator lizards and banisters.
What?
But
what?
Anyway, that was us. Everybody, I guess everybody, well, the people in my class, they did, so it wasn't unusual. It's just
what happened.
You know, we stayed in one part of town.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell y'all something, and y'all can't tell Brother Warren and can't tell nobody I told you this, but we've made many purchases at the secondhand store, at the thrift store, and nobody ever knew the difference.
Mm-hmm.
I like 12 our children stayed clean, they were neat and presentable, and nobody knew the business. Yes, we spend, you know, money on new clothes and that sort of thing, but for the most part, we didn't have a problem. And but I guess it is a value-based thing. But if I might, New Orleans, to the point that you were making in terms of that is a personal decision. And I think what I was hearing is if we were going to advise and counsel from a community standpoint, not a judgmental, but from a community support standpoint, families who do struggle from month to month, pay their bills, to keep healthy meals and foods on the table, how do we advise them? And one of the things that we can advise is that you budget, and your budget simply restricts you from spending an inordinate amount of money on one particular item that doesn't have a real substantive effect on the overall outcome of that, such as one child, you know you can't afford to buy all your children $200 shoes. And to supplement that, and I understand that it is a very emotional thing, and a lot of parents do try to, in effect, they try to win their children's love and confidence by showering them with gifts and what have you. History has shown us that they have a tendency to backfire in a negative way. But we wouldn't want to judge them, but we want to encourage them and motivate them and share good examples and best practices of how you get through good times and rough times, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what my son told me.
Well, let me point this out. You remember that scholarship scandal where all these rich people were paying money creating applications to get their children to these elite schools? I think one lady went and said that her daughter was some athlete. Well, what I'm saying is that these are people who these people in that element of class, they do this kind of stuff all day, every day. They bypass the rules. They break the rules. They try to make their own rules to suit them.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times when we're, and I use this image of standing over somebody, giving them a lecture about rules and all that, we got to keep that in mind, that people we think got it going on, they don't always follow the rules. They use their wealth and influence to cut corners for their children. You see?
Well, I'll tell you, I see what you're saying. I do see what you're saying. Part of what I do professionally is I authored a workbook entitled Parental Involvement Training, right? And it was focused on how they can be engaged in public education. And there we did offer, we had six modules, and each module we offered suggestions and ideas and about how to do certain things in the various topics that were in each module. I said that to say that was instructive in nature. It was not intended to be judgmental. So, some people didn't want it. Some people, we didn't try to push it on them. But some people wanted so much that they stole from us when we set up our table and what have you. They came and ripped us off of a few of them and didn't pay for it. But that's, I mean, guess what I said? I'm glad they got it, and I hope somebody learns
something. Yeah, but Ruben.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You had the Congressional Black Caucus member. You remember the CBC scholarship scandal between Reddy Bernice Johnson, a Democrat in Texas, where scholarships was coming to a scholarship fund. They was taking it, giving it to their grandkids and grandnephews.
I guess this happens everywhere, though, huh? And to everybody, white and black. And so it's not something that's...
Yeah, it's a human thing, but you only hear one side all the time.
Well, I mean, here's the reality. Here's the reality. And I think this is the gist of what we're saying now, and that is in the interest of helping people to be able to manage. This is what 12 was saying. You have to be realistic about your resources and what you can do and can't do. And don't allow yourself to overdo it and drown. You know, you understand what I'm saying? Because I've seen that myself as an educator. Children come to school improperly dressed, poor hygiene, but you look at their shoes, and there's some of the more expensive shoes, especially during around the holidays, Christmas and things of that nature, Easter and what have you. guess what? That is a personal thing, and I would never tell anyone that they couldn't or shouldn't, you know what I mean, engage in those things, but there should be some balance. That's the only point that I would make, and I would do that unjudgmentally, as you say, in New Orleans. So, but interesting thought, though. Very interesting thought. There are a lot of things.
Well, you know, another thing, I think that the advent of dress codes in schools, especially public schools, is a good thing.
Sure.
It takes that pressure off of parents from having to go out and buy the latest design and style and street clothes for these students to be wearing to school. I know one school that we worked with, Clamoja, had some girls who was wearing their uniform pants, and they was too tight.
Mm.
We talked to the one of the ladies, female teachers, and told them to have a speak with their parents and to tell them to stop wearing such tight clothes. And we could come up with a fund where they could buy, you know, something that was more loosely fit. The school in Kansas City, Chick School, that we know of, they used to have washers and dryers in the school. So kids come to school and their clothes are dirty. They have them take them off, put on something temporary, and wash their clothes. So all sorts of things have been done and provided in order to make things a little easier for those who are less fortunate, and which is a good thing because a child comes to school to learn. No child wakes up in the morning wanting to be a failure. The onus falls on society itself. A child cannot control the society that they live in. It's the people, parents, stakeholders that control that society, and they should make sure that child has what they need.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I agree. We got about another 30 minutes before we cut off tonight, but I appreciate the good conversation. You're listening to Talk Show. It's open mic. We can probably entertain another topic or two before we wrap up tonight. 657-383-0944, that's the number to call there. Looks like Pastor Wiley had to jump off there again. But anybody else have anything else that they want to share with us before we wrap that discussion up tonight? Okay. Going one? Going twice? What do I have? So, all right. 12, let me ask you a question. Now, you are there in Peoria, and I think Peoria is about a population, if I remember correctly, the data says about 26 to 28,000 residents or something like that. Is that right?
No,
in Peoria, Illinois?
I think Peoria has way more than that, 26,000, 28,000.
Way more than that.
Yeah, a lot more.
Perhaps it's probably close to 100,000.
116,000.
Yeah, okay.
From my resources that I'm talking to. But
no, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not real little at all, cuz you got East Peoria, you got Peoria, then you got, you know, the suburbs and different places in Peoria.
Yes. Okay, I was going to ask you, how many of those people do you think deserve to have their way of all that hundred and I'm not, I don't remember the, it's been a while since I looked at the demographics there, but I think it's predominantly African American in the urban most part of the city. How many of those people
out of all those people do I think deserve to have their way?
Yeah, that's my question.
Wow.
Question, huh?
Yeah. I don't think I'll text that. I think that what I do think is that I'm not, this ain't Burger King. You can't have everything your way. You can't have everything your way. However, what you work for at times and some things people deserve and some things people don't deserve.
So glad you said that. I'm so glad you said that because it goes to the other thing that the Facebook post gave us early prior to the show. They couldn't make it on with it. Left some ideas that they want to share in the open mic. And they were talking about the act of accountability. Now, and let me from you guys. When you get to a point where people assume that they deserve things to the point that they don't believe they have to work for them or make manifest fails, don't you start running the problem where they unjustly blame other people for them not having things if they have the mentality, I deserve that. You got 116,000 residents there, right? And everybody have the same opportunity to produce for themselves. But when you have a segment or all of them thinking, hey, I deserve the very best that the city has offered, don't you have a little problem there? Don't you run into some problems?
I think you can run into a lot of problems when people expect just because what they think they deserve might not be what happens. And that's the case in most times. And that's what the reference was I was making when I was speaking of some of the parents going out the way to show their love through the purchase of unnecessary items, opposed to the children have what they need. Your needs comes before your wants and your desires.
Sure.
Well Ruben, what about the carjackers? Do they feel that they need your car and you don't?
Because I don't deal with people in that bracket that's dealing with breaking in people's cars, and if I do deal with them, I have no knowledge of them doing such things.
Hold on one second.
I don't.
Okay. You're okay. All right, good. So he was asking me, what about those people who carjack others? And it's interesting, St. Louis, that somehow in their psyche, they place their desire for your material above, oftentimes, the value of a human life, right, and respect for other people.
Okay.
I want to believe I call it the rubber band effect, St. Louis. You know how you take a rubber band and you stretch it to its limit, and then all of a sudden you slip up and it pops away from you. You know what's going to happen next, right? it's going to pop.
Now, what got it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
yes,
and also, what about those Wall Street people who develop schemes to become rich off the backs of other people? Or they develop schemes to exploit people, such as bankers and other aspects. Look like Texas, the energy company with Texas chose not to go on their own grid. They didn't want to deal with federal regulations. Look at the big fiasco that happened in Texas with people dying in their homes because the heat couldn't be provided because electricity was being selected to go out. And it's very interesting. I thought what was funny about that in Texas was because Texas is supposed to be this real conservative state, right? But yet they had to, They had to issue out electricity like they were in a communist country. That's what I thought was so funny, because they had to select and alternate on which areas they were going to turn the lights off. So they had to apportion electricity like a communist country. And I just thought it was interesting that you have these people, these powerful people, who are not held accountable, and people get hurt from their greed. People get hurt and they die from their greed.
It's happened historically in the United States of America over the last 245-some years now, or 44 years, 204, something like that. So, yes, you're right. People have made poor choices. Folk in leadership have made poor choices that adversely affected others. My point My point is simply that in any society, in any group, it's important that every individual understands they must work for what it is they obtain and they have. The expectation that you deserve something automatically just because, that's not a healthy mindset. That's going to lead to problems. Go ahead there, St. Louis.
Well, that's an act of God, what you have in Texas. It's like in the Hurricane Katrina, Andrews in North Carolina. But here's the thing. Responsible parents, responsible household heads supposed to have their household prepared for survival, because you never know what will come. You should have the ability to collect water. You should have abilities. They have unperishable foods, and they talk about that all the time. Candles, sleeping bags, alternative fuel system, heating system, firewood should be available for your fireplace. So if people don't plan for things that's going to come unannounced, you know, the Bible speaks on the thief that comes at night and that thieves can come in many disguises. So that goes back to people supposed to, or people should prepare for emergencies and not depend on anything.
Okay. But you know, Rev, when people pay, you know, Rev, when people pay money for, they pay electric bills. They're working hard, and they have to pay these services. And then when the services fail on them, that could have been avoided, then the people in authority got to be held accountable who regulate, are supposed to regulate these corporate entities. I'm not going to blame the individual to be his own fault because he can't get electricity after he paid the electricity bill for so long.
One second.
I know
one
my
second.
Electric bill I paid was for the month, the past month that I got electric. I never know anybody to pay ahead of time. Go ahead, Rev. I'm sorry.
I was going to say that you were saying that responsible people should, and I was going to ask you according to who. So here's the thing. In America, people have the freedom and the right to choose what they do or don't they do, or what they do not do. My point is that what we cannot do is mandate or legislate a value base for certain things. And this kind of goes back to that earlier point. We can look, though, and see what are the very best practices for anybody, right? And a responsible thing to do to the need for electricity and things of that nature is to budget and what have you. And correctly, New Orleans, when you pay your bill, you expect the service. After you pay for anything, you expect to be able to have some service from that thing you pay for or that resource, right? That makes sense. And it's poor leadership in Texas. What we saw is a case study for poor leadership. Whoever made the decision to go to that grid system they had, it proved to be a bad decision because whenever an unexpected calamity hit, they wasn't ready. I don't know if they thought about it.
I don't know. And let me say this, Rev. Also, when there are acts of God, as you said, they're natural catastrophes. There are people come and exploit people in their most vulnerable situation. So it happened here during Hurricane Katrina. Corporate people came here and exploited it. Okay. And so a lot of times we spend a lot of what I call cliche energy. Analyzing the individual on the ground, when the individual on the ground and even the individual family on the ground can't match up against organized, interlocking corporate interests. You understand what I'm saying? Mm. So where you live, the neighborhood you choose to live in, corporate interests could decide to take that from you. Okay? The job where you work, when you feel comfortable, corporate interests could decide to eliminate your job. So we have to look at where the real power and where the real influence is in a society. It's called power and power dynamics.
Okay. Let me say it like this then. I take your point. As a pastor for now a whole quarter of a century, okay, people have looked to me because they assumed that I had a certain amount of spiritual or moral authority, guidance, and what have you, right? And so they kind of listen to what I have to say. Using that role, it's beneficial to encourage people to do things, everybody, not just one a handful, but everybody to be successful by doing things that others who have been successful done, right? And you hear me often lacing that with scripture because that's the best example. And what happens a lot of times is, you know, you tell people you got the freedom and you don't have to do X, Y, Z. And in the end, they don't do it and they wind up coming up short. But they had the choice not to. While everyone else was engaging and following a certain process, it benefited them. But those who chose not to for the ones who were empty-handed. You know, there's a story.
You still have a church, don't you?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I still have a congregation.
Do you have a Boy Scout troop?
No, we don't. No, we don't. No, we don't. No, we don't.
You know, that would be a good thing to offer the young people, the young, well, of course, the Girl Scout troop, too. And that way, the things that they can learn to do when they're away from the conveniences that they have. You know, one of the mottos of Boy Scouts, and I was a Boy Scout, I belonged to one of the biggest gangs in the world, which was the Boy Scouts. I had a lot of fun doing it. One of the biggest mottos is what? Be prepared.
That's right.
And it would well that churches, you know, since you, at least your sheep, you being the shepherd, the pastor, you want to make sure that in times of despair that they understand and well prepared in order to survive those times. You can have classes.
I agree.
Yeah, classes and workshops on how to provide the getting seeds and foods and store water. And you know, I provided some information, and I figured that for the cost of one of Beyonce's and those Remy and Yaki wigs, and one time going to get your nails done, having the pink and white or the nail polish, that would provide you with some firewood, food for 2 weeks, fuel, and also the water. You can get one of those 100 gallons from Walmart and put it in your bathtub and fill it up. You know, for just the cost of that, people have to sacrifice away from their luxurious things and prepare for times when that wig ain't going to be no good. You ain't got no heat in it.
Well, I'll tell you what, St. Louis. I this is a real experience that I had personally. And I think Pastor Waller remember this. Running for office, I was campaigning, and I had an event set up, and I was telling people some ideas about what I thought, you know, legislatively could have happened and some things that were good and that sort of thing. And one of the constituents, lady, seemed to thought that I was trying to tell them what to do or what they got to do. And she jumped up. She said, wait a minute. You can't tell us what we do. We're grown in here. I said, yes, ma'am, you are grown. One of the reasons you cast your vote for someone to represent your interest in a legislative body, a deliberative body, is because you're not there, and they're the person that cast the vote for you. So I'm just talking about what we all can agree on is best for all of us, not that I'm trying to dictate to you what to do. I hope she got the understanding of what I was saying, but that's where it seems to come out like that, St. Louis, is that people feel like you're trying to control their lives and dictate to them what they can wear, what they can't wear. You know, that's a whole other conversation, though, in terms of some.
Well, you just got to let them go.
Well,
you remember the man that was on his roof during the flood? And he was dead set that the Lord was going to save him?
I heard that story before.
One time came by a boat with rescue. They said, come on, get in this boat. What did he tell them? Y'all go ahead on. The Lord's going to save me.
He'll provide.
Next thing came a helicopter.
Oh, man.
Same question. He gave the same response. Y'all go ahead on. The Lord's going to save me. Another boat. Y'all go ahead on. The Lord's going to save me. As soon as the man died. He got to heaven, and he asked the Lord, Lord, what come you didn't save me? The Lord said, fool, I sent you 2 boats and a helicopter.
Mm-hmm. Well, so now we have a situation where a lot of good people are conditioned, and this is a point that I think 12 was hitting at earlier. They're conditioned to believe that, you know, I have a right.
Somebody else is supposed to save them.
I'm trying to put this right. They have a tendency to be conditioned to believe that because of what they've heard, that I have a right to have everything given to me, largely because I've been a victim, right, and I've been wrong, And now it's time for everybody to give me what I want, how I want, with a little accountability. But something is wrong with that argument. Especially, that's why I asked 12 a question about that population. I know it's like close to 660,000 people in Davidson County, here in Davidson County now. You know, that dog ain't going to hunt. Everybody do what they want to when they get ready. It's just not a big enough, you know, the place ain't big enough for that. We're finding that the infrastructure ain't too good here, is it, Pastor? Everybody's driving on top of one another. They got all these new buildings coming up and ain't enough roads for everybody to drive down. Just one of them things, though. Just one of them things. So, listen, we got...
That's what they're doing.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. We got about 15 minutes before we wrap up tonight. Good conversation, guys. I appreciate you. You've been listening to Open Mic Session of Talk Straight. Next week, we hope to have Dr. Nedrick Jackson to come on. And I want to really focus on how, this is not a negative thing, but how particularly African Americans can learn from what has come out. That was a CDC report recently about the adverse effect of COVID on ethnic pre-existing conditions and things of that nature. It's a lesson that, you know, it's a teaching moment, basically, I see it as. And she's going to speak from a medical standpoint about some things, and hopefully she can kind of guide us in some ways that we can think about. Not that Talk Trade is trying to tell anybody what to do, but offer some ideas and some best practices and suggestions of some things that can be done. Moving on to be healthier. I think that's what we all want, right? I believe that's what we all want, is to be healthy and to move on with life, to get on with life. So, Pastor, you have anything to say before we get out of here? I know you had to jump off and you've been a little quiet throughout the show.
Yeah, I just always want to make sure that, you know, I want to keep first name first. It's what I've always learned since I've been on the other side, is to make sure I say, choose you this day who you would serve. And oftentimes when things occur in life unexpectedly, some people have more than others to prepare to be able to handle situations and circumstances. That doesn't mean that they are better than someone else is, but also the word says more blessed to give than it is to receive. So if somebody's in need for something and you have it, you have to consider yourself being that person who's in need. And would you want somebody to pass you by? That would be me to say, okay, go ahead and pass me by, and I'm standing in the need. But if you have it, and the word says more blessed to give than it is to receive, I expect you to do something. You know what I mean? And I have a right to do that. That doesn't mean that I'm looking for somebody to, you know, to do everything for me. It's just at that point in time. And that's what the word is accurate about when he says it is. He didn't say it might be. It is more blessed to give. I was that kind of guy, Pastor Doctor. I used to love to wait to help somebody, anxiously, didn't mind.
Okay.
But I got it honest.
Okay.
It was a part of my come up. I seen my mother do it. I seen how she was able to, you know, assist others and everything. So that was something that I really learned to appreciate. Now, I do know what it's like to stand in the need. You know, that saying I used to hear years ago, it's better to have it than to need it, than to need it and don't have it. And so it's not all about the wants, it's about the needs. And the Lord himself said, and I'll turn it back over to you, that Paul said it, the Lord says, I'll supply all your needs according to his riches and glory. So if he supplied my needs, man, and all I need at that time is a hand. You know what I mean? And if that's the case, I have to consider myself being in that situation. And if I'm able and someone is in need and I can assist them, should I pass them by? I have to think about that, you know what I mean? And some people would be selfish enough to say, I'm going to leave you hanging. I'm not going to do nothing for you. Get up and do it yourself. You know, so it's just a thing where do you have a heart? The old James was talking about just the other day. Is it a heart out there? You know, is it love out there? Show love if you have it. If it's in your heart. If it's not in your heart, you're not going to show love. I don't care what you have.
you're not going to show love. You know, you're going to walk on by and have that mentality of, you know, hey, I got mine, you get yours. But that's not in the will of God. The will of God doesn't go like that from what I've learned. Why would he say that? I mean, you can go find it in there in the book yourself and look at it. And then he had a part in that. He says, remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said it is more blessed to give than it is to receive. And he said, we ought to support the weak. And don't forget that.
Sure.
I yield back to you on that note. That's what the word says.
Well, now, I read that myself. But I
it was definitely in there. It didn't change. It's established, and nothing and nobody can take nothing from that if they stand on the word. Now, if you have an opinion, now the opinion going to go in and say, no, it don't go like that. You know what I mean? So you're going to know automatic that that's not godly because, you know, you can – it's easy to say something about what God said, but you don't really care anything about what God says. It's what man says is overtaking what God is saying for the most part. From what I'm seeing out in society today, they rather take what man say quick, fast, and in a hurry than to take what the word of God is saying. And so that's a tough situation. It really is.
Okay. I was just going to say that it seems to me that you get better mileage out of learning how to fish than just getting a fish sandwich today. It was good to get the fish sandwich, especially if you're hungry, right? And please, please, New Orleans, make mine hot. You know, I want my sandwich hot. I don't do hot sauce, but make mine hot. But my point is that isn't it better to know how to fish and make your own sandwich than it is to expect someone to give you one. You need one, take it.
That's a good point right there, Pastor. But here's the key to it, though. At that time,
okay.
You understand what I'm saying? There's no time to teach a person how to fish. The time is the person's hungry, feed them. You know what I mean? That's what the word says. And so when you stand on that and then, you know, each one teach one is a beautiful thing. But at that point in time, you know, when is that they're talking about saving a person and you know, and it's like the opportunity is there. It's like this blind man. Check this blind man out. This blind man was sitting on the side of the road, and guess what he was doing? Begging. He was begging. He was a beggar. That's what he was doing. And by him posted up like that, you know what I mean, he heard the waymaker come through. And in the midst of that, there were some people that was with the waymaker who was supposed to be very humble. And as soon as that man started to speak to Jesus and ask him to have mercy on him, they try to get him to be quiet. You see? So things like that take place. You got to watch the ones who say that they really, really believe in the Lord. But all of a sudden, as soon as somebody's reaching out, and he could have said, no, you make your own self see. No, the man needs some help. And he needed right there.
I hear you. I guess.
You know, and then check this out, Pastor. While this man was going on about his business, by them telling him to be quiet, he got louder because he didn't want to miss out on an opportunity as if he had what it took to make himself see. So he got louder and said it again, even though Jesus did not stop the first time. As soon as he said it again and got louder, Jesus of Nazareth, have mercy on me. Jesus stopped in his track and told those same ones who told him to be quiet with their arrogant self. He said, you bring him to me. And as soon as that blind man went to Jesus, he asked a simple question. What can I do for you? And the blind man said, I would just like to receive my sight. And guess what happened? Jesus responded to him and handled that business and took care of him, meaning that the man couldn't do it himself. It's just at that point in time, sometimes it's just that very precious moment when the opportunity to do something for somebody to show up, just do it.
All right. Gotcha. We have about 5 minutes before we wrap up here. Let me give you the floor to St. Louis. Why don't you give us a final thought, and then we'll go to New Orleans, and we'll wrap it up there tonight. Great conversation. Open mic discussion.
Well, you know, one of the things that young people, well, of course it's not no mandatory, but you do have families that make sure that they're young, know how to survive without the conveniences of the pleasures of civilization. Okay. I used to take young boys out camping those weekends in Missouri, Trail of the Tears Park, Elephant Rocks Park, show them how to pitch tents, how to start fires with flint, get up in the morning and have breakfast over a fire. Come Sunday night, them kids didn't want to come back home. They wanted to stay right out there. We ran out of food. But no, that's what you have to do. It's your responsibility that your young ones know how to survive and not depend on anybody else. And if you fail to do that, then you're doing less than what's expected of you to do.
Okay. Yeah. Well, my son enjoyed making a box oven and cooking his mama some cookies and bringing them home to on a box oven out there in the wilderness, in the wild. So that was a good thing. Okay. Well, we appreciate that, sir. Appreciate that. All right. Well, what about it? Final word then, New Orleans, before we cut out of here tonight.
Well, I was talking, I was looking in the Bible at some scripture, and for people who think that they have it going on and others need to be judged, Jeremiah 9:23 says, "Thus say the Lord, let not the wise man boast in his wisdom, let not the mighty man boast in his might, let not the rich man boast in his riches." Proverbs 27:1 says, "Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring." Then I find in the Bible, James 4:17. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is a sin. Okay.
That's right.
And then we have here, it says, James 4:16, "As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil." And so these were some things when we try to judge other people and we think we got it going on. Proverbs 11:2 says, "When pride comes, then comes disgrace. But with the humble is wisdom." And so these are some things that I try to keep in mind when we kind of cast judgments on other people and not try to understand, that they may have less than we have, and they're trying to do the best they could do with what they have. They're not committing a crime or anything like that. They're trying to provide for their children like others have who may have more and to do more for their children.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, appreciate
that's
that.
Good.
That's point well worth
good
it.
Point.
I'll only say this. When you've been a pea boiled in a pot with other peas, you can talk about that experience. And you can share with other peas how to get at that pot if they don't want to keep on getting overcooked in that pot. So appreciate that. All right. Well, Pastor Waller, we leave this last minute and a half to you before we cut out of here.
Well, I enjoyed it. And I trust everybody who had a chance to talk, and for those who were just listening, that we would all realize the Word of God says, "Forsake not the assembling of ourselves together." Then it goes on said, "In the matter of fun." See, some don't care about the assembling when you're walking in togetherness. It's called interruption, distraction, bring forth confusion. But when we're all heading in the same direction on one accord, and everybody have their own form of gifts, talents, that's a beautiful thing to bring it into existence. Because remember, Pastor Doctor, the Word does say, where there's two or three gathered together in my name, according to the Word of God and what it said, there you will find him in the midst of us. And so we need to keep him first and watch everything become stirred up and utilized for his kingdom. And that's the beauty of getting to know him better. I yield back to you on that note.
All right. You've been listening to Talk Straight. This has been an open mic session. We'll be back Thursday night with a focused topic. And next week, as we say, we hope to have Dr. Mitchell Jackson come on with us to talk about some healthy habits there moving forward there. All right. On behalf of Talk Straight, my co-host, Pastor Waller, thank you, and we'll look forward to seeing you on Thursday for another episode of Talk Straight. Just say nothing. Give up your bag. Don't worry about mine.
That same old world.